So yesterday, the Supreme Court made a ruling about the number of majority-minority districts that are needed in Louisiana. I wanted to break down a little bit about what the Supreme Court had to say and how this plays out, but I wanted to do so by stepping outside of Louisiana to get an outside look back in. Matt Germer is a resident elections fellow for the governance program over at the R Street Institute. We love leaning on the R Street Institute when we can. And Matt joins us now. Matt, welcome aboard. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you doing this morning?
Doing very well. All right. What did the Supreme Court do yesterday?
So yesterday, the Supreme Court considered Louisiana's petition asking for the court to basically take on their case and evaluate all of the factors as to whether or not Louisiana would need to create a second minority-majority district. And the court declined and kicked it back down to the appeals court and said, hey, we took care of this in Alabama. We want the appeals court to take a look at our ruling in Alabama and decide the Louisiana case accordingly.
So that means essentially whatever the appeals court ruled the first time will hold up again this time.
It makes it slightly likely. Yeah. But with that said, there will be another chance for Louisiana to have that bite of the apple after the appeals court takes another look at it. The Supreme Court basically told the appeals court to do it again. Now, that means the appeals court could come back and say the same thing they said before. They don't have to, and Louisiana would have their chance to appeal after that decision is made.
The comps between Alabama and Louisiana, obviously the Supreme Court felt that they were enough to lump them or give them the same result. What was your takeaway on how similar those looked?
You know, I think there are some similarities. There are some distinct differences. Let me point out a couple of the similarities. Both Alabama and Louisiana have substantial black populations, especially compared to the rest of the country. Alabama, about a quarter of the state is black, and Louisiana, about a third of the state is black. You know, that's important because you have six seats in Alabama, only one of them being held by a black member and being held by Democrats generally. You know, at some level of analysis, there seems to be a bit of a mismatch there, and that was the case in Alabama as well. Mm-hmm. That said, I want to point out, you are allowed to draw the lines for political advantage, regardless of race. That's something the Supreme Court has made clear. So that's one of those similarities. But the difference is Alabama has those black voters in a relatively compact and contiguous area in what's known as the Black Belt of Alabama.
Yes.
Louisiana is a bit different. There's urban centers, and then the black population is spread out a bit differently. There aren't nearly as many parishes in Louisiana that are majority black in the way that there are counties in Alabama that are majority black.
And this is where I keep running into the problem, because the who and the what is made very clear in the Voting Rights Act, but the where is where we run into problems. And the geography of it is, I mean, you do have to have contiguous districts, but like Louisiana 2nd starts down in New Orleans and just basically snakes up the river to get here to part of Baton Rouge, and actually kind of curls around part of Baton Rouge, leaving this, it's a messy map to begin with. Reworking this is not going to be easy.
It won't be easy. It might be necessary. You know, that'll be the big part of the fight. You know, one thing to consider is that the analysis that the court would use for evaluating whether or not this is the problem, the key phrase, as they say, is there the totality of the circumstances showing that the minority group can't elect the candidate of their choice. Sometimes that phrase gets used in a way to look at the way that district is snaking. It looks unnatural. It doesn't seem like the kind of map someone would draw, you know, unless they were trying to pack Democratic voters into one district.
Right.
That fact is going to count against the state of Louisiana as the court analyzes it. And it's something a little bit different than we saw in Alabama, where at least the maps that Alabama was creating made some sense when you just looked at the shapes of the district.
We're talking with Matt Germer from the R Street Institute. He's a resident elections fellow for the governance program over there. Matt, let's talk timeline for a little bit, because this has to be done before the 2024 congressional elections. So it feels like we've got a good chunk of time here. However, here in Louisiana, we will have statewide elections this fall. So we're looking at a changing of the guard in October and November for these elections to be sworn in January. We're faced with the idea that you're either going to have, and we're going to have all new statewide offices, Secretary of State, Treasurer, Lieutenant Governor, Governor, all of that. is going to be brand new. Okay. New lieutenant governor is going to stay the same, but your governor, your secretary of state would be your two players that would be involved in this story. You're also going to have 47 brand new legislators sworn in January as well. So timeline wise, would it behoove Louisiana to wait for a changing of the guard while at the same time pushing the clock back to get this done in early 2024? Or would it be better to get to work now?
That's a great question. You know, I think the court would say get to work immediately. That's their prerogative. Yep. Strategically, it might make sense to wait. All of that said, Louisiana, as you are well aware, is a unique state in the way that the primary and general election system works compared to every other state. That pushes the deadline out to some extent because you don't have a June or an even earlier primary election to be ready for. And really, that key date is the filing deadline. Candidates need to know what district they live in, yep, or at least around. I know for congressional, you know, representation, you don't have to live in the district, but it does matter. And so, you know, candidates need to know where the districts are drawn before they even decide to file. So that's that real key date to pay attention to.
Hey, we just bought 68,000 Jell-O shots in Omaha, Nebraska, celebrating the College World Series. You don't have to tell me we're different around here.
That's right. That was amazing. Congrats to the Tigers.
Yes, thank you very much. UCLA grad Matt Germer is our guest. We're talking about the redistricting coming up. Matt, so there's this one part that's sticking in my head that I can't get past, and that's not so much of what the maps will look like, but who gets to draw them. Is there a possibility that a judge would take over and say, no, Louisiana legislature, you've had your chance. We're going to handle this now.
That's a great question. And we saw that same kind of issue happen where I live these days, which is in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They had a case just go up to the Supreme Court around the same issue. The legislature drew maps. The Supreme Court said, you know what? These maps violate the state constitution, in our opinion, and we are going to redraw them. And North Carolina said, hold on. That's not your power. You don't have the ability to redraw the map. And so they ended up with the case in front of the Supreme Court. Now, that case will potentially be decided here in the next week or two, or we'll see how that one ends up resolving. But that question you bring up is still a lingering question in the court.
Okay, so if it were to play out that way, we could very well see this be hung up in the courts. If Judge Shelley Dick were to take this over and say, no, Louisiana legislature, you've had your chance, and she takes it over and the judge decides we're going to take a map that's already been created somewhere, this could very well end up in the court system all the way through the 2024 congressional and presidential elections.
It very well could. And this becomes another one of those major points that the U.S. Supreme Court might have to decide is, let's say the legislature comes up with a map, you know, and then it's in this weird pending moment before the election, which map do you use, the old one or the new one? And that's, again, kind of reflecting back on the state I live in now in North Carolina. They have had their maps so constantly in court that election by election, the map just seems to keep changing between the judge-drawn map and the legislative map and back and forth. That could happen here as well.
A couple more minutes with Matt Germer from the R Street Institute. I greatly appreciate your time and insight this morning. Let's go back to the Voting Rights Act that requires this level of representation. What else does it say about the rules of what a district should look like?
So the Voting Rights Act is a bit difficult to parse through in the actual Section 2 language, which is what's relevant here. There's a couple key points. One, it says that members of a district and of a minority have to have the opportunity to elect representatives of their choice, but it also makes explicitly clear that nothing in the Voting Rights Act creates a right to elect members proportional to the amount of the sizes of the minority group. So that's, you know, even though in Louisiana, as we look at this, and you've got 6 congressional members, but a third of the state is black, you don't have a right to have 2 of those members be black members. But it's all convoluted because at the same time, the law says that minority groups that are compact, that are large, that are politically cohesive, mm-hmm, do have it's illegal to create a redistricting plan that diminishes the ability of that group to elect candidates of choice. So you have these 2 competing pieces of language in the law. Largely, at the end of the day, what that means is if you have compact and large minority groups that are politically cohesive, if you have racially polarized voting in your state where black voters tend to vote dramatically different than white voters, then basically you have to draw an extra minority-majority district under the law. Practically, that tends to be how it plays out.
The way this also plays out is the emphasis here is on African-American, is on the black community. Is that the way it was written, though, or can this apply to any minority community should the population demand it?
That's a great question, and it can apply to other minority groups as well. States like Texas have explored this when looking at Hispanic voters, although Texas is an interesting state as well because you have got a substantial population of Tejanos, Mexican Americans who live in Texas who actually vote Republican. So you don't necessarily have that racially polarized voting in the same way. You know, that racially polarized point is another great one when looking at some state like California that has substantial minority populations, but you don't necessarily have racially polarized voting because the white voters there also vote Democratic. And so that's part of what makes this law seem to constantly apply to the Southeast predominantly is the large minority populations in the Southeast, as well as the pretty common split in partisan ID between racial groups in the Southeast.
There's a lot to unpack. You did a heck of a job doing it. He is Matt Germer with the R Street Institute. I greatly appreciate a couple minutes this morning. Thanks for hopping on board, man.
All right. Thank you.